is remarkable. He comes up towards the winning line under Davy Russell to win his second Randox Health Grand National.
Desert Orchid, watch history being made. Roars of applause. The king's in his county.
Heading down towards the last ride in the champion hurdle, and it's Annie Power comes towards it now. She's about four lengths clear. Viziosi jumped it perfectly.
Welcome to this week's podcast. I'm Patrick Connelly, filling in for my esteemed colleague Tom Nugent this week. Now, we're going to have reaction to British Champions Day from Ruby Walsh and Paddy Power, as well as a chat with the legend that is John Ox. And it's all straight from the horse's mouth. It is a very warm welcome back to the From the Horse's Mouth podcast. And what a weekend we had. A tremendous British Champions Day for soft and heavy ground horses. It was flagged up by one of our two wonderful guests today that maybe British Champions Day is a title that could be perhaps revisited. We'll get to that. But first, let's introduce our wonderful guests once again for Monday. It's Ruby Walsh and it's Paddy Power. Lads, how are you after the weekend?
Wonderful. Really good, but kind of, yeah, I'm kind of the same by Champions Day. I was really looking forward to it, and it's a bit like, meh. I've maybe been talking through my pocket now for my worst ever day's punting, but I found it a bit funny, all right.
So you didn't back Holly Doyle and Tom Marcand. Ruby, how are you?
I'm very good, PK. I'm glad to sound a little bit more upbeat than Paddy, whatever is going on in Power World today. I know there could be a lockdown coming this evening, but Paddy is definitely in the mood for it already. Are you okay, Paddy?
I'm okay, Ruby. Don't worry. Don't feel too sorry for me. I'll be grand. I'll be very happy by the end of this. Don't worry.
Well, we hope so, Paddy. Is it? I dip in and out of this podcast. Listen, obviously, before I come on. You're reading some sort of a book, I believe. Is that not the thing that gets you going?
Well, that's Ruby just slags me about that because generally I am Mr. kind of wellness and positivity. So Ruby kind of slags me that I'm reading some sort of self-help book, which I kind of my kind of ongoing lifestyle at the moment is very much all about that, all about, you know, positivity and all that kind of stuff. So I will give myself a good kick up the arse now while we're talking, and I'll be very positive by the end of this, I promise.
Well, you are maybe like a lot of people, maybe not, but a lot of people be looking to this weekend and the prospect of Cheltenham, and that will certainly bring a lot of positivity. And we'll get to that a little bit later on, but we want to start with the big talking story of the weekend. And it wasn't the horses on British Champions Day. It was Holly Doyle first, Tom Marcand second, the big two in the racing world. Ruby, I mean, there's a lot of hype about Holly Doyle, and justifiable. She's doing really well. We've seen it before, female jockeys, obviously Hayley Turner and Josephine Gordon, but herself and Tom Marcand to come away with four winners on British Champions Day out of six races is phenomenal.
It's incredible to go back to one household, but I think Holly Doyle would much more appreciate if you were just calling her a jockey, because that's what she is. She doesn't want to be called a female jockey, and she's quite right. Katie Nina were the same, Rachel Blackmore, Josephine Gordon, Hayley Turner, they're jockeys. And I think that's the brilliance of horse racing, whereby it doesn't matter your gender, your race, whatever you are. If you can get on a horse and ride winners, people will use you and you will be successful. And that is what's great about horse race. I mean, Holly Doyle walked into Ascot on Saturday with the opportunity to earn exactly the same money as Frankie Nadori, Ryan Moore, Tom Marcand. She probably earned more than him, or maybe he earned more than her. But her opportunity as a lady was to earn exactly the same as the men. She gets the same opportunities, and it's because she is good enough. And that is all any female in the world has to be to compete with male jockeys, is good enough. And that is exactly what Holly Doyle is and what Rachel Blackmore has done. Josephine Gordon, Hayley Turner, they definitely broke the mould, but that's all it requires, being good enough. And Holly Doyle is. She's 8 stone. She doesn't have any weight trouble. She's as fit. Listen to her interviews. They listen to the other guys. Listen to how little she's blown compared to some of the men that came on after her. She's incredibly fit. She could use a whip in her left hand or in her right hand. She showed that in Glen Shield. She switched it 3 times down the straight. And it doesn't matter what gender or what race you are, it's about results, and she's getting them.
She definitely is. Paddy, she's in the similar position to yourself, I think, when you were starting out in your career at the company, at Takeover. She had to put on a stone rather than put off a stone. So do you remember those days when you had to get the protein shakes in just to make sure that you were ready to come racing, but come into the boardroom and slam the fist down?
I was wondering where you're going with that one. Yeah, I'm not sure I ever had to put on a stone. But I did put on a stone though. I didn't have to, but I did anyway. But yeah, no, I think it's like Ruby said. I mean, I can't really follow up to say anything better, more articulate than what Ruby said there. It's spot on. It's one of the great things about this sport is the natural equality of them. There's no, you don't have to force it. It doesn't have to be positive discrimination or any of that kind of stuff. It just naturally happens. And the only reason why historically there were maybe less female jockeys, now jockeys who happen to be women, was pure just probably societal sexism. And that's kind of gone now. And I'd say it's not too far away before people would be going like, well, was that ever an issue? And I think that's great.
Yeah, I think it's probably now enough. I think if I think an owner might have had a question if a female jockey was jocked up, but now it should be just a good jockey. Simple as that. Look, it was a great story. It did, as I said earlier, kind of was bigger story than the horses. And we have to touch on it, Ruby, because you did flag up that British Champions Day in your Irish Examiner column at the weekend. You did say maybe British Champions Day, it's not quite the name that it should be, because where are the champions?
Yeah, look, and someone did say, well, there's champion jockeys on show. Of course there is, but you can go to Yarmouth tomorrow and watch the first race and see Holly Doyle, Ryan Moore, Tom Marquand. I think Frankie Dettori could even be there. In racing, you can see champion jockeys pretty much every day of the week. So it becomes about the horses when you're talking about champions. And I just think when it gets to the end of the year, coming after the Arc, the only race that really was a champion race was the Champion Stakes. It's been there for years. The others have sort of been created, and they should be. Look, they're entitled to be there, and it's a great day's racing. It was entertainment. I sat down and watched every race on Saturday in the sitting room, and I love watching it all. But I kept thinking, champions? This is not. It's the finale race. Stradivarius was over the top. We didn't have any wonderful clashes because we've had them all by now. England's had its time in the sun. It had Royal Ascot. It had York. Then the horses came to Leopardstown for the Irish Champion Stakes. Then they went to France for the Prix de l'Arc meeting. And some of them will go on to the Breeders' Cup, where the weather is much drier and the ground will be much quicker and it's going to suit them all better. This is contrived. And if they want to have a final day in the UK, call it finale day. But it's not Champions Day.
Yeah. I think it's a fair point. And when you think of Cheltenham Festival, people go, well, the Cheltenham Festival, but then there's loads of racing after the Cheltenham Festival. It's not the final meeting.
Punchestown didn't go and put champion on every race in Punchestown to try and hype it up a bit more. The Irish horses will go. The English may or may not come. There's huge prize money there. Aintree is the same. Cheltenham is where it's all decided. You didn't try and stick one in afterwards to say, we'll do better than that.
Exactly.
Well, Ruby, just I heard a bit on the commentary, or the experts talking around the race and talking about horses before, that looks, some of them looked like might be gone in their coat because the end of season. Like, what, is that important? Like, say, Dream of Dreams, they're saying looks like is, what's that? Is just the hair is growing or something? Or?
Yeah, but it would be because it's coming into winter. So lots of horses would be clipping and started. I mean,
but does that affect the performance, like?
Shouldn't affect their performance. But it's just cold days, horses growing more hair to keep themselves warm. That's naturally what they would do. But you did look at horses and see some that were over the top. And it's hard to tell by their coats. I find it hard to tell by their coats. Maybe other people can see exactly what's happening, but I most certainly couldn't. But you could see the same things happening over jumps, Paddy. I would often have gone from Cheltenham after having a bean over Paul Nicholls and turn up in Aintree to ride those horses, and they would just be gone over the top. It would be one race too many. And that looked to be the case in Ascot for quite a few horses last weekend. It was a race too many for Stradivarius. It was a race too many for Mishriff, Palace Pier. A lot of the John Gosden horses underperformed, and that's just because it's the end of the season and they've had a jam-packed campaign.
The other thing I was thinking about was, as I was licking my wounds, but funny, if you look at the results, they weren't like huge outsiders. So, I mean, you obviously could have backed this. It was just me being a rubbish tipster. But the other thing that struck me was that the season was different this year because of kind of missed the start of it. I mean, everyone was kind of condensed towards the beginning, which was amazing at the time. But I wondered that could have left a mark as well. It's just, you know, it's quite an intense period of racing.
Possibly, but you're still looking, things were back sort of on an even kilter, almost at Goodwood, most definitely by York in August. Leopardstown played out in its usual position in September. The Arc was where it always is. That's a possibility, but you could definitely see the Leopardstown race in Magical. When she left the stalls, she looked flat and lethargic, and Ryan Moore's body language on Magical compared to Tom Marquand's and Ada Eve, to Frankie Dettori's on Mishriff, to even to Pierre-Charles Boudot's on Scaletti. They were all on horses with enthusiasm that were racing forward, whereas Ryan Moore was having to nudge to try and hold the position that he couldn't get into, and then he ended up in the wrong place because his horse wasn't going early in the race to get him in the right place. And she looked a little bit tired. Now, that could be the ground as well. She definitely, on the slower ground down in the Swinley Bottom, probably didn't suit her, and she could go to the Breeders' Cup and bounce back yet.
You're listening to From the Horse's Mouth by Paddy Power. Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
When the news of John Ock's retirement broke late last week, the Kerbeg trainer became the headline in a way he rarely did during his four decades at the top of the game. And while he shunned the limelight of his more illustrious contemporaries, he was nevertheless entrusted with the very best horses by leading owners, and with good reason. Here are some of the very best performances produced by his stable stars.
No need to ask, he's a smooth operator. And Ridgewood Pearl put to a full-out drive. A bitter struggle past the eighth pole. And now the whip is out on fastness. On the outside, Ridgewood Pearl giving their all. And Ridgewood Pearl lengthening her long and powerful strides to go on to a victory here. Chicago, Western
Maine. Sindar in front, battling hard. Monsieur's not finding a great deal. Egypt Band's the big danger. It's Egypt Band who's flashing home, but Sindar on the far side, a length in front, holding on. The three-year-old battling Gabri, and Sindar wins the arc. Alamshar on the near side, Delacarty the far side. Alamshar responding now on the near side. Delacarty coming back at him. They're neck and neck with 150 yards left to go. Alamshar on the near side for Johnny Murta. Nedges into the front now, and Alamshar wins the Irish Derby by a neck. See, the stars is answering the call. Here's Rip Van Winkle, though. He's coming up on the outside. See, the stars has to dig deeper. He accelerates. It's See, the stars. He's coming away. A stellar race goes on to become a champion.
Right, I'm absolutely delighted to say that John Ox is going to join us on the From the Horse's Mouth podcast. John, I know, I was going to say you must be a very busy man, but you're certainly busy doing interviews at the moment after the announcement of the retirement. This is yet another one, so apologies for that. How are you feeling after the announcement was made, John? I suppose you've had a little bit of time to settle on the decision.
Oh, well, sure, I'm feeling fine about it. It was an easy enough decision to make, and we're very happy about it, my wife and myself. So, you don't want to think too deeply about it, but it's nice to wind it up and nice to look back. You'd hope you'd sort of be able to retire quietly and not have anybody talking to you and all that, but I've learned a long time ago you just can't avoid certain things, so we've had lots of interviews, but it's been very nice, I must say, to think, you know, and maybe people make you ask you questions, it makes you think back on things that you'd forgotten about or that you maybe weren't putting enough importance on and all that. So it's a time of reflection, I'm feeling fine. I'm looking forward to it.
Cool. We'll get through to the next chapter a little bit later on, which obviously you've got lots of time to think about now. One question that did spring to mind with the timing of the decision was the unusual 2020 and whether that played any sort of a part in what's going on in the wider context of the world.
No, not really. No, I didn't think, you know, where racing was lucky, it could more or less carry on. People could carry on their businesses reasonably well. I'm sure some people were affected by it more than others, like everything else. But no, in my case, that had no bearing on it at all. We've been thinking about it for a few years, and now is the time. COVID or no COVID, we'd have, you know, we were going to do this, I think.
Now, I'll get the lads to jump in a second, but there's a few horses that I wanted to talk about. Obviously, See the Stars we'll get to, but one horse who, when I myself was getting into racing, was that stood out was Ridgewood Pearl. And what a horse she was. And back in the mid-90s, to win a Breeders' Cup race for Ireland, it wasn't something that was done that often. Now we see so many Aidan O'Brien horses and others go over, but probably was something that a little bit out there. Obviously, your neighbour, Mr. Weld, would have been doing sending horses all around the place. But Richard Pearl, what a filly she was.
She was, yeah. She was a great filly, yeah. Big, you know, big, strong, masculine filly. Very dependable. You know, and her work at home was always very consistent. She was the same every day. She had a great temperament. She was just a great racing machine. Big, strong filly. You know, you could see it the day she came into the yard. She was, I always liked those big, strong fillies. She always looked really good. I'll never forget the day Christy Roach rode her first time out at the Curra in a listed race. I ran her first time out in a listed race. I think she was favourite. I wasn't there at the runner in France on the day, but he got beaten ahead and neck, just didn't touch her with the whip, gave her a nice introduction. He came in, he told my assistant Jimmy that's the best filly I ever rode. So I thought, gosh, we thought she was good, all right. But that was a fair statement from Christy, of course, who was a man with great instincts. And he actually won the 1,000 guineas on her then the next year. But yeah, she was a great filly, and the Breeders' Cup was a big event, all right. Of course, at that time, it was just one day, and about six races, I think, is all they had. Nowadays, it's extended to 2 days, and there are more races. So they were difficult to win, for sure, and it's a great occasion, particularly because of who owned her, too. She was owned by a local man in Kildare, Sean Coughlin, and his wife Anne, and Sean had grown up, he wasn't exactly born with a silver spoon in his mouth, and he went to London, made a few bob and came back and had a horse, and it was a great thing for him to have a champion filly trained on the Curra beside where he was born, and it was very exciting for him, and they got tremendous fun from it.
Absolutely, yeah. Trips to America. Was that in Santa Anita at that stage, or that particular year?
No, that was in Belmont.
Belmont that year. Okay. So you didn't get the sun of LA, unfortunately. You got the cold of Belmont.
No, we had a wet day. It rained all night and all morning, but suddenly just stopped raining before our race. So that was good.
As if by magic. Your association with the Aga Khan obviously brought some seriously good horses, and in, funnily enough, quite a short period of time in terms of the likes of Sindar, Asamoah and Alamshar weren't too far apart. Of that trio, for me, Sindar, I don't know if it's because what happened at stud with him, and not what happened, but just he didn't quite perhaps scale the heights he did on the track, seems to be a little bit forgotten for me in terms of what he did on the track, because his three-year-old campaign was phenomenal.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I think he's the only horse to have won the Epsom Derby, Irish Derby and the Ark. He was a great horse. He was undemonstrative at home. He was a lovely-looking horse, beautiful mover. Anybody who'd come to the stable here and come out with me looking at the horses, they'd pick him out and say, God, what's that? And lovely looking medium sized horse, but didn't show a lot at home. I thought he could be a horse who'd run well in a derby without winning it, but it soon became apparent as a 3 year old that he was going to do much more than that, and he always just pulled out enough, and he was a horse that improved every time he went to the races. He was, you know, 5 to 7 pounds better than the previous time. He just went up and up and up, and there was no end to what he could pull out of the bag, you know. And it was a great. He was a great horse. Very solid, you know. Same every day. Just got a bit more aggressive as the year went on. You could see him changing and improving into the autumn. And he went, when as soon as he won the prep race for the Ark, the Greeniel, we knew he'd be very hard to beat in the Ark. So anyway, it all worked out well, and didn't do too badly at stud, actually.
I was a bit harsh on there, John, sorry. Yeah.
Didn't do too badly, but he didn't have didn't have a super pedigree. You know, there were little things in his pedigree that maybe stopped him from doing a bit better at stud. But yeah, we have fond memories of him for sure.
No, I've no doubt. One more to touch on for me before I do let Ruby and Paddy ask a few questions is See the Stars. And you mentioned that Sindar probably didn't work the house down at home, but I remember watching the Mick Cannane documentary a few years ago after he retired, and he said that you came up to him one morning and asked him to get up on this two-year-old that you thought you were going to run. Not that early in the season, but Mick Cannane thought, oh, okay, I'm going to ride a two-year-old for John Oxenham, you know, this early in the season. And he knew straight away, well, this one must be fairly good. So you obviously had an idea with See the Stars, there was something there.
Well, he was a beautiful horse. And of course, he had this terrific pedigree, half-brother to Galileo. So obviously, you know, your hopes are always high when they have a pedigree like that. And they, you know, his great confirmation, you know, you were beautiful. Well-grown horse, beautiful mover, smashing temperament. You know, he was a kid's ride as a yearling. Did everything right, learned quickly, you know, his speed smart, knew everything straight away. Easiest horse to break. And so obviously we had hopes for him. He's the sort of horse you'd put Mick Cannane on the first chance you'd get. yeah, he was impressed right from the beginning. So our hopes were high, but you know, we've all seen that before. You know, the early signs are good, pedigree is good, the horse is nice, you know, and they work well, and sometimes they go on and they win the first race, and so many of them then just crack, you know, when the big day comes, more pressure, more racing, you know, it sorts them out. And but with him, nothing, you know, he never cracked, he was never in danger of cracking either. We knew he had the constitution mentally and physically to go right through his three-year-old year and win all those races. Once he had won the Guineas and the Derby, we knew what we had then. And we just had to keep him right and go through the rest of them and hope for the best.
What a season it was. I'm sure you're bad for Twitter, John. I know you're all, I'm sure you're all over it. And Ruby does want to ask a question, so I will let him. A lot of the after you announced your retirement, a lot of the clips on Twitter were of obviously your great horses, but there was one interview, your BBC interview after See the Stars won the Arc. And you don't see it often, John, I'll be honest. The emotion definitely was there after that one. It's something, I don't know if it's intentional or otherwise, but there was definitely a well of emotion in you after that win.
I'm not sure I can remember the I can remember the interview, but well, look, at a horse like that would make you emotional. I still get a bit emotional actually talking about him. But well, that was such a you know, an important thing, you know. Well, of course, such a great thing to have a horse like that. It was a real miracle to, you know, no trainer could expect to ever train a horse like See the Stars. It's just, you know, they're so rare, and for one to land in your stable is you know, couldn't be planned, and you're just so grateful to have him. But it was such a relief that day to see him win the get over that last hurdle, because he had to win all those races to be one of the greats. You know, you don't get that little tag by having one great performance. You'll see some horses and they have one fantastic performance that they can never repeat or have never done before, and or they have two big runs. He had all that series of them, you know, each month for 6 months, and but he had to do that, and he couldn't be beaten in the Arc. You know, it was the one time I was pretty anxious. We knew he was in great shape. In fact, Mick said he was better than ever. He was improving all the time. But you know, the Arc, you can lose it. Things can go wrong. And so to get him over the line was just an incredible thing. Now, so if I was emotional, I can understand why.
John, thanks so much for taking our call this morning, and we could talk about all the wonderful horses forever and ever. But you trained more than just very good horses. You trained lots of horses, and from the time you started training and had classic success in the mid 80s up until now, what do you think has changed most for racehorse trainers? What is the thing in your career that has moved the most or changed the most?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. Well, I think, you know, I think it's harder and harder for trainers to run their business, and it's more expensive to keep going. Trainers are up against it a bit more. There's a lot of competition, I suppose, too. You know, some trainers have an awful lot of horses, so they're bigger trainers sweeping up a lot of the horses. But that's something that can't, you know, that's the way it is. That's life, and that's same in every business. So I think there are more trainers struggling than ever before because of the difficulties of paying wages and, you know, doing everything right, having to comply with all the things we have to comply with. And then just the level of competition, you know, is difficult for people to deal with. But that's the main difference. I think life was a bit easier before for everybody.
Well, you've been extremely generous with your time, John, but I do have one extremely important question to finish up on, and it's the one that, again, probably has been asked a fair bit. What are your plans for retirement?
I haven't got any plan in particular. I have a property here that I'll have to keep an eye on when we hopefully have a tenant into it at some stage, and no, I'll be keeping an eye on things from a bit of a distance and keeping in touch with everybody. And I'm sure I'll people won't let me do nothing. And I'm sure I'll get little jobs to do probably from time to time for people and get out and about and hopefully have an excuse to go to the races. And it'll be nice to just keep in touch with all the people I know. You know, it wouldn't be nice to live like a hermit, and I like reading, but I don't want to read a book every day all the time and never go outside the door. So I'll enjoy going and meeting all my fellow trainers and jockeys and what have you over the years, and keep in touch with them and see how they're getting on. So I don't know. I doubt if I want to be terribly busy, but I won't be idle.
Well, you've been pretty busy for your career, and you've been extremely generous with your time. And if you're looking for more reading, email Paddy Power. He's got plenty of books that might interest you. But listen, John, thank you so much for your time. Best luck in retirement, and we hope to see you in a race course soon when we're all allowed to go back.
Very good. Thank you very much.
You're listening to From the Horse's Mouth by Paddy Power.
Well, that was John Ox, so generous with his time. Ruby, Paddy, a gentleman trainer, a brilliant trainer as well. What are your highlights? What do you make of that? Not what do you make of him, man. What were your highlights of his incredible career?
My highlight of his incredible career most certainly won't be his highlight. My highlight was riding the winner of the big amateur handicap in Galway for him back in 1997. I won on Gariba. I had ridden her at the Curra and gave her a pretty ordinary ride in typical John Ox fashion. He never said boo, never gave out to me. Johnny Murta had to correct me about it in Galway, and I changed the tactics, and she won the big amateur handicap with 12 stone on her back, with R. Walsh claiming 5 offer in Galway back in 1997. That was definitely my highlight with my association for John Ox, and it was a race I won that my dad had never managed to win, although he did win the amateur derby for John Ox many years ago. I can remember him doing 10 stone 9 on a horse called Teleco, and it was run at Fairy House back in the day. But look, Sindar won the Derby the same year Papillon won the National, and obviously See the Stars was the horse of most people's lifetime, and to me was, look, to win a Guineas, a Derby and an Arc with the one horse in the one season, that's the only person that's ever done it is John Ox.
Simple as. Paddy, anything to add?
Yeah, I'd say until See the Stars, Ruby, I'd say the highlight probably was that amateur handicap.
I think it was just a big occasion for us both.
It's very easy to and for me See the Stars is obviously takes over everything, because I was a huge See the Stars fan that year, because like Ruby said, it is like, it's a special, it can't just be luck, you know what I mean, that to get the horse sound to the races every time and turn, like we just talked earlier about Champions Day and how horses can be over the top, but to keep the horse humming for that long through the season, and you know, and going abroad and doing and traveling all the time, like we've talked about Frankel and the comparison, saying, you know, well, Frankel didn't have to travel, so like the away game is always harder. And so that was just one particular horse. It's a testament to the man who didn't have as big an operation as the Coolmores on that, and was still able to mine the horse and do it. And it's one of the things about being a trainer, I'd say, and if I probably should have asked him, but like from early in his career to late in the career, does it change? Because to be a trainer, you probably need lots more than just a knack with horses, because you need to be able to run a yard and plan your program and all that kind of stuff for all the horses in your yard. And so it's a big complex operation, and for someone to do it as kind of calmly and as gentlemanly as he always has. I met him many times over the years with my parents and that. He was friends with mum and dad. And I just very quiet, but what a gentleman. I bumped into at Ascot when we were having the great success over there as well. And just a lovely, lovely man. And yeah, I wish him all the best in his retirement. A man full of integrity. And that's something very important.
You're listening to From the Horse's Mouth by Paddy Power. Paddy Power are streaming all UK and Irish racing on our app. No bet required. Just log in and watch. Terms and conditions apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
Okay, so it's everybody's favourite part of the From the Horse's Mouth podcast. It is time to... You better stay sitting there, because your sage advice, straight out of page 43 of the famous book, is about to be imparted on our wonderful listeners. Dear Paddy, a good friend of mine has bestowed on me the duty, the privilege, nay the honour, of organising his social send-off from singledom. But how do I go about putting together a respectable stag do in these Covidian times? It's not happening until next summer, but I'm anticipating some regulations will still be hanging over us, the type that might stifle typical festivities. To make matters worse, the guest list has been set at an astronomical 32 participants. Yes, that's 3-2-32. And some of them have made it clear they don't want to go racing. This is, I'd say, the greatest responsibility I've ever taken on. I have a strong belief in the robust nature of my children. I'll be honest, at this stage, I'm really panicking. Please help.
Well, obviously you should go racing, and that cuts down the numbers as well. A few people aren't going to turn up. The key thing is what's going on in the world. So if I was you, I'd be smart and selfish, right? And the smart thing to do is to plan nothing, because we don't know what the state of the world is going to be next summer when you have the stag to do. And then lastminute.com, a few furious WhatsApps around the place, and something will happen and it'll fall into place. Don't worry about it. It'll be grand. That's the best strategy, I think, when you're planning a stag to do. Just don't worry about it. It'll be grand. If you organise something now, you'll get so much. The whole, between now and next summer, all you'll have is moaners on going, oh, this is never going to work, that can't happen, this can't happen. So what you need is, you need one of those WhatsApp groups where people aren't allowed to reply to you, and you just tell them what to do. So you need a good authoritarian dictator running this stag do. And if that's going to be you, you just tell them all, you have it in hand, don't actually do anything, but just pretend it's a surprise and you're organising it all. That's my advice to you. And at the end of the day, just go racing.
Plan nothing, says Paddy. Okay, time to delve into the world of Twitter for our esteemed panel and get some questions over the last week and see what they want to ask of Ruby and Paddy. Ruby, I'll start with you on this one. Dan Wakeman sent this one in. Has there ever been a bigger power couple in racing than Holly Doyle and Tom Marquand?
Aidan and Marie O'Brien.
So the answer is yes. There has. It's not fair. They've got a bit to go, I think it's fair to say, but they're heading in the right direction. Training empire next, after riding winner after winner after winner. But yeah, the bit to go. They're starting
then
on the right
two,
foot.
Then breed two champion jockeys and whatever else goes with it.
Champion champion trainers soon enough, at least one of them, I'd say. He's got a good chance of being a champion trainer. Melbourne Cup winning trainer. Yeah, okay. Yeah, bit to go. Yeah. Okay, bit to go. But yeah, hey, not far. Mervyn Smith, Paddy, has asked, is Paisley Park a forgotten horse?
I haven't forgotten about him anyway. But yeah, just last year was probably disappointing for Paisley Park. And I wouldn't say forgotten horse. Say maybe. I wouldn't say he'd be one now on my short list for like at this stage of the season, I guess, for Cheltenham and that right at the moment. But I wouldn't go too far as say it's forgotten horse.
Okay.
Like probably it's the bloody flat season. Like, so of course we haven't been thinking about Stayers hurdle horses, but the fairy tale will start beginning in a couple of weeks' time.
It will. Another horse racing one on the national front for Ruby before we get the real nitty gritty one for Paddy. Matthew Paling asks, with Bouverdere returning to Seven Barrows, Ruby, where do you think Epatant will be aimed?
I would have thought Epatant would So whichever one of them is going best, we'll go to the fighting fifth, and then you'll know which one is number one.
You still think champion hurdle? There's no, they're not going to deviate from that.
No. I wouldn't have thought so. Okay. She's a real 2 miler, so where are they going to go? Go chasing with her? Harley Boubar there coming back from an injury a year older? No. He's going to be the backup.
It's not bad having two goes at it, is it, as well, in the champion hurdle? They've won it with the, they've won it with the green capped one before, and they'll win it again with the green capped one again, no doubt. Paddy, but really the big nitty gritty question of the week was sent in from a Mr. Price. No, we'll call him Lee P. Fruit and nut or dairy milk?
Dairy milk. I was never a fan of putting the fruit and nut together in the chocolate. Now, I'd be more of a dark chocolate fan than a milk chocolate fan. So,
70% cocoa, we're talking here.
Yeah.
What page of the book is that on? Dark chocolate is better for you.
I just prefer dark chocolate. I've kind of taught myself not to eat. I wouldn't be much of, I'm more of a savory than sweets, like, so. But yeah, I wouldn't be mad. I wouldn't buy a bar of chocolate in the shop. If I was buying something, I'd buy one of those. Like, not a protein bar, but you're one of those kind of nutty. Do you know those bars? Do you know the ones I mean?
Like, you're buying them so often, you can't even dig it in them.
I wouldn't be.
A tracker. Is it a tracker bar or something
that
like that?
That kind of thing, yeah.
Okay. Okay, so no
riveting stuff as ever, PK. Great questions. Our listeners are so cerebral. It's great.
Well, that particular listener certainly delved into the depths of his inquisitive knowledge, I think it's fair to say. Thank you very much for solving the riddles of Twitter. Well, that's all we have time for. A huge thank you to Ruby Walsh, Paddy Power, and most notably John Ox for all of their time. For a longer, unedited version of the interview with John Ox, do head to news.paddypower.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, as well as checking out paddypower.com for all your prices and specials on another big racing week. The team are back on Friday to look at the Cheltenham October meeting, and the man who tipped up the winner of the Champion Stakes last weekend will be back in the hot seat. No pressure, Tom. Until then, stay safe.
From the Horse's Mouth is a Muddy Knees Media production for Paddy Power.
John, I'm sure you know Patrick's dad, Kieran. You would definitely have dealt with him in the past.
Oh, my God, the handicapper. I'll have to show him due reverence, though. Handicapper, son.